welcome to another episode of Lid Radio Podcast. Today on our Inside Knowledge series, we're listening to Paul Dupuis. He's CEO and Managing Director of Randstad India and the former chairman of Hope International. He's also the author of the E5 Movement, Leadership Through the Rule of Five. And today he'll be talking through the E5 movement as a whole and the first of the E's, Envision. So now over to Paul.
Greetings from India, where we've been in lockdown now for 145 days. And with crisis comes an opportunity to reflect, to look back, and to make sense of the journey so far. I'm going to look way back as we start the conversation around the E5 movement. Back to when I was growing up in Canada and where the roots of my own leadership were planted. In the book, I talk about my experiences as a young boy growing up in Canada, playing a variety of sports, whether it was baseball in the summer, American football in the fall, hockey, ice hockey in the winter, of course, and the lessons that I learned on the playground. Leadership is clearly not about a title. It's about who steps up. It's about making things happen. And that happens on the playground. Anyone who's played sports, informal pickup games and so on playgrounds and around the world will have a common experience. And that is kids gather together, teams are picked, and the game begins. The process of picking the team, someone steps up. When the game is being played and there's a dispute over whether there was a foul or the ball was over the line or whatever the disagreement is, someone steps up. So I learned some important lessons growing up on the sports fields and on the ice rinks. I also learned some important lessons about leadership in my community. I was very involved with the local church, with different volunteer organizations and so on. And that was largely due to my father, who was quite an active man in the community himself. And many of the lessons I learned about leadership came from him. You know, leadership, as I discovered, as I mentioned earlier, it's not about a title. Leadership is about influence. And it's about gathering people together towards a common goal. And along that, of course, comes many other items that really make an exceptional leader. And I talk about that in the E5 movement. So my experience growing up in Canada, it really kind of laid the foundation for what would become a fascinating journey in learning about leadership and becoming a leader myself. And I say journey because it's never ending. A number of principles that I believe in. One is that leadership can be learned. Anyone can become a leader. I don't believe that there's such thing as a born leader. In fact, we are all born with the capacity to lead, just as we are born with the capacity to follow. Because as we know, the best leaders also are very good followers. We all grew up at one point in our lives following. And we've all experienced that moment where we were a newbie, where we were just starting out with that very first opportunity to lead people. I want to read a small excerpt from my book. In fact, it's the very first paragraph in the book in the introduction section. It goes like this. The world is full of competent managers. These are the people who follow processes and meet deadlines. They run a tight ship and they deliver on expectations. They focus on playing the game well, but they don't change the game. I've always had a desire, an urge, maybe kind of an itch to be a bit better than yesterday, to make a bigger impact, to strive for something more. And when you're young, and we've all experienced it at one point, there's that sort of curiosity that's born out of that quest, almost that, it's almost a frustration that, you know, hey, I can do better, I can be better. And in my case, coming from a smaller city in Canada, there was this interest and curiosity and passion to go and see the world. For me, that was my itch. And so it was. In 1989, I was working as a welder at Chrysler on the assembly line. That's how I paid my way through university. I also learned the meaning of hard work working in the factory on those long 12-hour shifts, especially in the summer in the heat. And I also observed what I saw around me in the factory. The factory, the assembly line, is its own community. It's its own ecosystem. In a way, it's its own universe. You have the established hierarchies along with the unwritten rules of behavior and also the pecking order, and we would call that the totem pole as well, largely based on seniority, of course. So the junior guys on the job got the toughest jobs, and that was always me, of course, because I was the young guy in there, a young student working part-time shifts. So I would work 3 or 4 shifts a week. And I also received a lot of great advice, sometimes straight out verbally, from the other guys on the assembly line who had been there for many years, or just from observing behaviors. The advice was actually silent. But what I did find was one thing. I found that as I worked on the assembly line and I got an understanding of how this factory worked and how the meticulous relationships that go into the building of a vehicle in a very short period of time, in one shift, in 8 hours, a vehicle can be produced, and how important it is that everyone follows a process. So that's actually my first kind of introduction to process. And I actually learned about quality control circles at that time. Little did I know that I would one day end up in Japan and study the Toyota production system and Kaizen and everything around that. And I explore all that, of course, in my book. So I had this quest to go and see the world. Well, the world's a big place, but at that time for me, it was about Asia. Everything was about Asia because I was really interested in Asia. I was studying the martial arts, and I decided that I would go to Japan. Now, back in 1990, it was now, this was pre-internet. The only source of information we had was a library, and in my case, Lonely Planet books. So I did my research, and I found this city in Japan called Osaka. It was kind of a second city. And I remember the page very clearly. It said that Osaka is a city where people like to, they like to laugh, they love their sports, they're very warm-hearted, they speak their mind. And it's really kind of traditional Japan. And I thought, I have to go there. So saved up my money, took everything I had, sold off my car and all of my possessions, bought my ticket to Osaka, packed up my backpack, and off I went in September 1990, 30 years ago. And I arrived in Japan, and my adventure, of course, began there. It was supposed to be a six-month trip, an adventure in Japan, and ended up being more than 25 years in and out. I fell in love with Japan, and I also discovered karate, Japanese martial art of karate. And that's where I learned Japanese. That's where I learned the culture. And I learned a lot about leadership in the process. Fast forward a bit, I've lived and worked across the Asia Pacific region over the years, back and forth to Canada once. I did my graduate studies on the west coast of Canada. I actually became a high school teacher. So I was a licensed teacher, high school teacher for about 10 years in British Columbia and also back in Japan. But I always had this yearning to do something entrepreneurial. What I really discovered in reflecting on is I wanted to lead transformation. I wanted to start something and lead something with impact and grow it, build a community. And ultimately, as is evidenced in the book, and I talk about it, create a movement. Because to me, that's really what exceptional leadership is all about. It's one thing to create something. It's one thing to grow something. It's another thing to transform something. But to create a movement which is self-motivated and self-generated is a powerful thing. And so in my journeys living in Singapore, leading organizations in many countries in the Asia Pacific region, in Japan, leading a very large organization there that covered the country, and most recently in India, where I am now, in an incredible country which is rising, full of complexity. On the surface looks like chaos, when in fact, the more you lift up the layers, it's organized chaos. Everything works somehow in India. It's absolutely incredible. I also discovered something in India called Jugad, which I talk about in the book. Kaizen in Japan, as many of us know, is all about meticulous analysis, identifying bottlenecks, and working on efficiency, making the processes more efficient. Jugad, on the other hand, is the spirit of creativity and ingenuity, coming up with a creative solution to solve a problem. Both are extremely effective for leaders. And I've learned a lot about both firsthand, and I talk about those, of course, in the book as well. So why the E5 movement? Well, the E5 movement was born in part by, reaching the half century mark in my life. I think there's something about turning 50 where you start to look back and look at your journey and look at your discoveries. And I also read a quote from Richard Branson, something like this: if you feel like you've led an interesting life, it's your duty to share it with the world. Well, I don't know how interesting my life has been, but definitely my leadership journey has been pretty eclectic. It goes beyond the boardroom. It goes from the ice rinks at sea level right up to the top of the world in the Himalayas, where I've been coaching and volunteering and playing ice hockey, where I also got a Guinness World Record, which I'll talk about more later. So the E5 movement is built on the back of the shoulders of giants. It's from learnings from leaders that have walked before us. And that's something actually that I really learned in Japan. It's the concept of the senpai and the sensei, which literally means someone who walked ahead of you, and how we learn from them and apply that knowledge. There are so many leadership models out there. And certainly, if you were to do a quick search on Google, you'll find the 3 C's, the 3 E's, the 5 E's, the 5 T's, and so on. And then there are models of leadership around situational leadership, servant leadership. There's Jim Collins' version of level 5 leadership, which is about exceptional leadership. And all of this overlaps in some way, shape, or form. And I believe that no one really owns these leadership models. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. We all learn from those who have gone before us, right back to the beginning of time. And so while nobody owns these leadership models, we all own them. In other words, it's like open source code. We build off of the previous layer. We add strength to it. We add wisdom from learnings from others. And then, of course, we share those with the world. And that's one of our duties as leaders. And so in writing the E5, I have learned from so many models that already have existed, from leaders who have walked before us, and in the process have crafted my own personal version, what I call the E5, leadership through the rule of 5. The 5 E's are: envision, express, excite, enable, and execute. And today I'd like to talk a little bit about envision. Envision is the first and most critical step for any leader who's on a mission to change the world, to make an impact. And what we see is that many leaders, particularly those who are strategic thinkers, those who are big picture thinkers, tend to be pretty good at crafting a vision, something that is comprehensive and ticks a lot of the boxes and is quite intense and detailed. Where a lot of leaders struggle, and many leaders fail, is at the envision stage, is that the vision becomes so grand that it simply can't be digested. In other words, people can't absorb it. It's too detailed. It's too strategic. And it's often laced with jargon and high-level thinking. A vision, an effective vision, as we've discovered, and as I've observed and discovered through my studies of exceptional leaders across genres and across borders, the most effective visions are extremely simple. And they're always rooted in purpose. So the first lesson we learn about envision is that a compelling vision must touch the hearts and the minds of the team that you're leading. It has to talk less about the what, less about the how, more about the why. And somewhere in there, it has to be a bit dreamy. It needs to inspire people to think about what the world would look like if this vision were to come to life. So the vision needs to be laser sharp. It needs to touch both emotion and logic, and it needs to address that critical question of what's in it for me? What is the world going to look like when this vision comes to life? And so for me, I've been sort of crafting my personal vision as a leader over the years. And just in recent years, and I would say certainly impacted by my time in India, I've come up with my own vision, and I would even say a mantra, which is at the root of my personal vision and definition of leadership. And that is, do well and do good. You know, as leaders, when we're coming up, we start off as individual contributors, individual players, and we prove that we're pretty good, pretty proficient at what we do, and someone decides that we deserve a promotion, and then we become a team leader or a manager. And then from there, it goes on. And certainly, if you're leading a high-performing team, you get the next opportunity to become a leader at the next level. What we always need to remind ourselves as leaders is that ultimately, as we move up the ladder into new leadership roles, it's more about helping others to be successful, helping others to make an impact, helping others to make a change. And that to me is what leadership ultimately is all about. So doing well is certainly leading teams to excellence, but that's not enough. That's only one piece of it. The second piece is doing good. And doing good, in my mind, and the truly exceptional leaders who I've studied, you'll see this evidence in their behaviors and their actions. These leaders also focus on doing good for others, for the world. And they choose their cause, and they leverage their ability to do well, the organizations they lead, to also do good. And that's a key learning that I share in Envision. Throughout the book, there are lots of golden nuggets, as I call them. These are the takeaways, the lessons that I've learned over the years from other leaders, as I've been very fortunate to be influenced and inspired by some pretty amazing leaders over the years. And in the book, I share these discoveries in the form of those golden nuggets. Those are the takeaways. And ultimately, there is the challenge, there's the call to action to develop your own vision, to come up with a vision which will change the world.
Thank you so much to Paul. And remember, this is the first of 3 podcast episodes from Paul about the E5 movement. So do keep your eye out for the others. And you can do this through our social media channels at Lid Publishing, where we'll be sharing other podcasts, books, and expert opinions from people such as Paul Dupree. Take care and see you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.